This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen here with you. Hospitals play a key role in disaster readiness throughout our country. And since the terrorist attacks of September 11th and the anthrax scare, hospitals have stepped up their readiness efforts in order to be better prepared in responding to not only traditional disaster threats like extreme weather, but also for terrorist attacks, including the use of chemical, biological, or nuclear agents. We'll hear with more on this as Christopher Dunham. He's the director of the Emergency Management Program for Upstate University Hospital. Welcome, Chris. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Chris, emergency management is on everybody's minds these days, especially, I guess, in the hospitals in this country. Tell us why this is. What is the role of the hospital in this whole picture?
The hospital offers kind of a pillar of response. We're the one thing that really doesn't move easily and that people can go to get better for obvious reasons. It creates some challenges with emergency preparedness. Most businesses can close or relocate or things like that. Typically, a hospital can't do either easily. And we are basically the receiving point for disasters in the community. So if something happens outside of us, and going beyond the multi-vehicle crash or train derailment, they come to us. And that's sort of the end point of the disaster. So we have to be ready for anything.
So how is Upstate University Hospital getting ready or ready, I guess is the question.
We're ready. We prepare actually, strenuously, 365 days a year. We do at least two or three full-scale exercises per year. We integrate and meet with the county and discuss disaster plans. We also have a committee that reviews our own plans, tests them. Subject matter experts, people from all disciplines within the hospital structure. And we basically test things as we do. It's a great job in the fact of nothing's ever done, and you can always get better. What's interesting, too, is we apply what's called an incident command response or programming objective to all disasters. In other words...
Yeah, explain what that is.
Incident command is a process of how we would respond to a large-scale incident. It's basically a way to organize a large organization to respond.
So quickly, that, I would think, with speed and accuracy.
Accuracy, and also to dedicate the most resources to where it needs it the most. Realistically, Upstate's a very large institution. For a large institution to be responsive during crisis situations, it needs to assume a direct line of communications, command, and things like that, and dedicate resources to where it needs it the most. So if we need stretchers out front to take care of patients, we can do that a little faster.
So you have to set up, besides the practice, I want to get to the drills and the practicing that you do, but it sounds to me like this whole chain of command, or command and control, as they often refer to in the military, is a crucial piece of this, so that something will take over, some body or person or persons will take over in light of some kind of an emergency, and basically take control.
Yeah. On both the administrative and the clinical side, we have higher up leadership who assume command during crisis incidents. We basically communicate that to the rest of the hospital. It changes some of the rules in terms of how we do our day-to-day, but not much. And we dedicate either people, stuff, or area to the whatever crisis is unfolding.
So what kinds, I guess, I want to know so many things. I have so many questions. Well, first of all, what kinds of incidents are you preparing for? In my introduction, I talked about, obviously, this whole notion of the terrorism stuff.
Right.
And sometimes people think in our area of the country that's less likely to occur as opposed to bigger cities where they might be more, popular targets or
Well, I mean, on a statistical average, terrorism is a little less likely than, let's say, a big train derailment or a multi-vehicle accident, things like that. I mean,
or an ice storm.
Exactly, exactly. And that can be just as crippling, or if not more so, to some extent. We prepare for almost everything. We assess on a yearly basis what we consider, and this is the Emergency Preparedness Committee, what we consider to be the top five priorities of things we need to worry about are threats. Number one on the list is always what we term as influx of patients, which could be almost any reason, whether it be the vehicle crash, pandemic, epidemic, which is something we test and drill for extensively.
Things, for example, at one point a few years back, they were talking about avian flu mm-hmm. or something, swine flu or things yep. of that nature, where yep. you could be flooded
yes.
with patients.
Yeah. The hospital is always a very busy place. We're always
anyway.
Very, yeah. yeah it, to begin on any given day, you add another percentage of the population that either believes it's sick or could be truly sick with some highly contagious virus, you cripple the system. And part of incident command is keeping the system going. In other words, we don't want to stop the care we already give unless we absolutely have to or something out of the ordinary happens. So we prepare for pandemics. We prepare for the terrorism. We do that too. We prepare for, let's say, an anthrax attack. We have a decontamination team that can set up a response capabilities and basically decontaminate a patient before they enter the building so they don't contaminate the hospital.
In this world, I mean, with so much going on, you think about what's happening in the Middle East and mm-hmm. all of the kind of constant change and the fact that terrorism can be exported with one person flying with an American passport from the Middle East somewhere and wreaking havoc, things could happen in a place like Central New York as well. So clearly you really do need to be prepared for anything.
Yeah, anything. I mean, and that's, we take a global approach or an all hazards approach to incident command. And that's the nice thing about the incident command system is that it allows us to apply almost the same matrix to almost any threat. So the response, you can train people on the response, and that's pretty much the same. Now the choices they have in front of them will always evolve and be different, but how they set up the process to help them remains the same.
And resources are obviously crucial, having the resources yep. in place to be yep. able to respond.
Yep. And we take a look at our threats on a yearly basis, and we identify the resources we would have on hand. Let's say if we lost water in certain parts of the hospital, we would have water, bottled water available to give out and distribute. And those are some of the resources we already pre-deploy in the event of that happening.
So you just said earlier, I said, how ready is Upstate University Hospital? And you say, we are ready.
We are, yeah.
What kinds of drills are you doing on a regular basis? You mentioned you have three major incident drills.
We have more than that. We actually do a couple different types of drills. We do what's called a full-scale exercise, and we do those probably at least twice a year, if not more. And those typically involve not just our hospital, which is both the community campus and the downtown campus, but we also involve our community partners. EMS, so the Emergency Medical Service, the fire department. Also, Onondaga County plays an important role in this. Also, integrating with the local Department of Health. They have a emergency management department and getting them involved in those drills and making sure everybody's in the same loop. And usually we try to expand those drills to stress the system. It's fine that we do a drill that is very small if we learn something very specific, but usually we try to stress the system because that's when we learn the most. We could do the same drill year in and year out and never really learn anything, and we're not doing anybody any favors. We also do what are called tabletop drills, which are basically facilitated discussions, where I'll get some leadership in a room and I'll throw a problem on the board saying, okay, this just happened. And that's less in terms of clinical, but that's more in terms of a response, like how do we set up command?
What are the infrastructure?
What is the infrastructure? What are the resources you have on hand to do that?
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Christopher Dunham. He's the Director of Emergency Management for Upstate University Hospital, and we're talking about disaster preparedness. So give me one example of a kind of drill. Well, the large-scale drills. I mean, do you blow up an airplane? I mean, what do you do to practice?
We haven't blown up anything in a very long time, thank goodness. We do decontamination drills, so we simulate a contaminated patient arriving in our ED. And we have a team that's dedicated and trained very extensively to respond to such a thing within the hospital. So the patient arrives in our facility. They would set up a decontamination tent and roll out some protective equipment. So these people have to put on what's referred to as a powered air respirator, so it's a PAPR. And there's some training that goes along with that. And basically they decontaminate or shower the patient and make sure they treat any life threats at the time and then bring them in and treat them like a regular patient. But the process to do that, it's a multi-step process. It takes quite a while. It's very extensive. And we do that probably 3 or 4 times a year.
Wow. Well, let me get, you mentioned something about water before and mm-hmm. What you would do if the hospital didn't have water or power, all of those kinds of things. Let's help our listeners at home. I know that people have talked a lot about what to do in an emergency. Can you give us a feeling for what people should do to prepare at home for an emergency? In other words, what's the first step? Should they gather a particular kit together of items?
Certainly, there's a lot of aftermarket kits they can buy for preparedness. I mean, if you type that into any search engine on the internet, you'll get a lot of things for sale. Some of the simple things are usually the best. With the understanding that you need to be able to do a couple things very well. You need to be able to communicate. You need to be able to basically relocate if necessary. And you also need to be able to protect what you have. Keep a copy of all important papers, but keep it somewhere where you can grab it and leave. Also keep a way to communicate, maybe extra batteries for the cell phone, or maybe a radio where you can listen to news, a whistle. During Hurricane Katrina, that became actually an important item for people to have.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, communicate is communicate. It doesn't have to be across the county. It can even be down the road. So a whistle would be sometimes important. Flashlights, batteries, things like that. Food, water is critical. Typically, water is usually what takes the longest to get to find
clean water, yeah. Especially if there's an issue. Yeah. So how many days water supply should someone have, for example?
If you go to ready.gov, which is the sort of FEMA website that allows people to look at a more complete list, typically anywhere from 48 to 96 hours worth of water. So that's pretty much a couple gallons per person per day. Mm-hmm. Now, another thing that people tend to forget, and if you look at all the literature, is extra medicine, especially for special populations or special needs populations in terms of the elderly or very young. You want to bring diapers for the kids or baby formula or what have you, something to get them through.
So the other thing, when you talk about communication, not only in terms of yourselves and the outside world, but how about within your family, for example? Right. Should you be talking within your family about what to do should something strike? I mean, we hear all the time now in the Midwest about tornadoes coming and devastating communities.
Right. Have a plan and communicate it. Basically, if you have to relocate, I mean, you can't have a plan for everything. But have a plan of saying, okay, look, if we have to move or we have to relocate, we're going to try to go here first or try to make this phone call first. And communicate that so somebody else knows. I hike a lot, so usually I'll tell somebody where I'm hiking.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's ultimately you communicate where you go. So if something does happen, people have a general idea of what you were trying to do, and that aids rescuers immensely.
But clearly what you've said, which I think is interesting, is that all of this information really is readily available for people if they were to go on the internet and mm-hmm. look under emergency preparedness or, as you said, the FEMA site.
Yep. Ready.gov.
It's ready.gov.
Yep. It's all right there. And the government's actually done a really good job, especially after Hurricane Katrina and 9/11, of preparing just kits you can print off, and it gives you everything you need.
Well, it gives me a feeling of security knowing that you're here watching over the work here at Upstate University Hospital, because it is the pillar and it would be a pillar in obviously in any emergency that we might face. So I want to thank you for coming in and sharing all the information with us.
Thank you. And, thank you for having me.
You feel Upstate is ready.
I do.
Very, very good. Well, my guest has been Christopher Dunham. He's Director of Emergency Management for Upstate University Hospital. Once again, Chris, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.